This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Franco Accarino.
And Weir.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Franco, last week we were talking about the city mission and the various activities around that.
Right.
But you are, you tell me, you are the founding city missioner in Palmerston North. How did that happen?
Well, good question. So, as you can hear from my accent, I grew up in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And my sense of social justice was really quite strong at quite a young age. Mm-hmm. And I saw so many injustices that I felt it would be good if I could contribute in some way. And so I used to work in a corporate mm-hmm. bank, and in the training division, and we had a lot of staff members who had not actually had enough education to enter vocational training mm. within the bank. And so
this was in South Africa.
Yeah. Mm. So they asked me if I could help them just with English classes to bridge the gap mm. so they could actually access vocational. And so I started a program with them. It didn't take long that we had a few others, for example, some cleaners who were not literate, mm. and they said it would be great if they could actually learn to write their names or start writing and reading. And so I introduced a program as well, all within the corporate, and we started an education centre within this bank. And that's how I was just really looking for ways to actually empower people and assist people. Mm. To actually have better outcomes. We also ran business English classes for those who may have had a degree in a non-English university mm. who actually needed some polishing.
And that's it. So in South Africa, you mean the Afrikaans-based university?
Yeah, that's right. And so we had a whole range of programs from people learning how to read and write. And it's quite humbling to see an adult actually holding the pen and forming their letters, you know. It's just really quite something. So I worked there for a while. Then, unfortunately, we merged with somebody else, and the whole education centre was closed.
Yeah.
I was then involved in the university. In one of the projects was a family literacy project. Mm. And so this was empowering parents to share books with their children. Mm. And this, we went into informal settlements in tin shacks, basically, mm. and we tried to help the parents into AIDS orphanage places.
AIDS orphanage?
Yeah, so of course during...
Oh, of course.
Yeah, there were a lot of children who were orphaned because the parents had died. And they were literally...
So there were dedicated orphanages for those?
Yes, there were quite a few. And so the one that we worked in, there were different houses with house parents, and then they may have had 6 or 7 children in each house. So try and make it as normal as possible so they could actually grow up in this context. So we went along and shared and helped with some reading programs there as well. Then we also went into a prison where there were mothers with their children. So we were in quite a few different...
What drove you into that area of work?
I don't know. Just, again, it's about empowering people and the whole thing of just assisting people and just being there and supporting so they could look at a different way of doing things.
Is that tied to the family values or religious values?
Probably
or
both.
Just general interest?
Was literacy something in your family? Books and things?
I always had books at home. But again, growing up in an Italian home, we weren't able to access many Italian books. Yeah.
Okay, now hang on. Yeah. You were saying you were born in South Africa. Yes. Your parents are Italian.
Yeah, that's right. That's
they
right.
settled in South Africa.
That's right, yes.
You were born there.
Yes.
You didn't really identify as South African?
No.
Okay.
No. So, yeah, it's all a bit complex. I suppose growing up as a migrant. So I didn't even know that I wasn't in Italy until I went to school. And I came home and my mum asked...
Because it was all Italian spoken?
Yeah, all Italian. And then there was a big Italian community. And there was even an Italian club where we'd go and play bocce and have pizzas, Italian movies as well. So when I went after my first day at school, I said, yes, school was good, except that they all speak a funny language, including the teacher.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing how children just, day one, you don't understand a thing, nobody understands you. And you just suddenly pick it up. It's quite amazing, actually. Yeah. So at home we did, I mean, my parents were still learning English.
Yeah. You knew no English when you started school?
No,
so you're born there five years.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Even sort of going to shops or whatever,
it was all Italian shops? There were a lot of Italian shops as well.
Yeah.
We would get sort of Italian products coming along. But you know, I suppose if we went to a shopping centre or a shop, there was English, I wouldn't necessarily pay attention to...
Yeah. Television?
No, we only got television afterwards, in 1976 in South Africa.
Okay. Mm.
So we just had the radio, I suppose. My parents had a lot of records, so we'd listen to Italian music, or dance to some of the music. But, I wasn't actually exposed to English as such, which is quite interesting. So, anyway, returning to the Family Literacy Project, I was, so that was one of the things that I did. As part of the university, one of the schools that I worked in, they had a huge adult literacy drive, and my professor's goal was to train 100,000 adults who had not had the opportunity of going to school. And so, massive, massive project, and so they... received books, stationery, everything to enable them to actually become literate. And so my portfolio there was in the prisons. So we had 650 prison students in 55 prisons in South Africa. And so that was my portfolio. And I did quite a bit of teaching in some of the schools, some of the prisons that I worked in. And that again was really quite empowering as well.
In what way?
A lot of the prisoners that I spoke to were quite aimless in terms of what next when you're released.
So was it empowering for them, you mean, or for you?
Well, for both. I mean, I just felt that I was contributing towards...
So you use the word empowering rather than rewarding.
Well, I suppose it's both, a bit of a combination of both. But I was empowered to continue, I suppose.
Motivated,
that's a perfect word. Yeah, I think I am English second language speaker. Let me throw that in. There's no excuse, right?
No, it's the changing use of English over time.
South African English, right? So a lot of them didn't actually know what was going to happen afterwards when we introduced this program. Some of them actually said, well, this could actually look good on my parole. And so they... enrolled, but then they actually saw the benefit of it, that when they were released, they could actually give back to their communities. And so it was an amazing program. They did a one-year certificate or a two-year diploma program, and there was also an honors program attached to it as well. And that was super cool, actually, working there as well.
Yeah.
I also worked in Mozambique in the Department of Adult Education.
Because of close links between the countries?
I was a consultant and I was just invited to go. So I spent, for 2 years, I did a week in Mozambique.
Yeah.
And then I'd fly home and then I'd fly in once a week.
Okay.
And there as well, I was actually doing curriculum development for specifically adult literacy. And they wanted that to be connected to a qualification. So similar to a school. So, your year level one would be equivalent to X number of years and work through that, which was really amazing as well, work. And then we came here and I started working at Massey.
How did you come here?
Oh, So we decided that, because it was just a decision that we just for our children as well, and to have a different future.
This was roughly when?
In 2003 we arrived. Okay. Yeah, so we've been here for a while. Yeah. And it's been.
And you came straight to Palmerston North.
Straight to Palmerston North, yes.
Was that a culture shock?
No, I couldn't go much smaller than Palmerston North because I was used to a bigger city. But it's a really good place to settle in, and we really enjoyed it. My daughter thinks it's a little bit too small. Yeah. But
at a certain stage in life, it is.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's been really good for us to be here. And so I started at IPC, and then there was a postdoctoral fellowship in adult literacy at Massey, and I joined there, and then I just stayed on as an academic, and worked on a range of topics, from climate change to friendship formation.
In what department?
Communication, journalism and marketing.
Okay,
And then I had quite a strong call, or a very strong call, to move to City Mission.
A strong call. Yeah. You were very religious, or it's the activity itself that you...
I think it's sort of my social justice background, but also, it was a spiritual calling. I felt God sort of leading me in this direction.
Okay.
Chance to give back.
That's right, exactly. And I thought, well, maybe when I retire one day, I'll do that. Yeah. But God's ways aren't necessarily our ways. And so, so I took the bold step of leaving Massey and joining City Mission. And that's been amazing.
And when was that?
2 years ago.
Okay.
So I've been there 2 years. So, our. Kaupapa is C4C, which is support, empower and advocate for change. And I just feel that it fits in, aligns with who I am as well as an individual. And hoping to support more people and empower people as well. So one of the things that, we'd spoken about earlier, that there's... Do we start another food bank or food kitchen or soup kitchen or something or not? But we're also looking at possibly having cooking classes.
Yeah, that's probably quite useful now.
People as well, again, budget recipes.
I think a lot of people don't seem to know how to cook with fresh food these days. So they think it's very expensive to cook. It doesn't have to be.
And also, I think we were having a chat earlier that end of season... Everybody has thousands of tomatoes, thousands of feijoa, and everybody puts them out on the pavement, but everybody's got them, and it's actually such a waste of food.
Now, Anne here is the expert in what to do with all that.
There you go, we need to...
I actually am a passionate preserver and making chutneys.
Fantastic, so you'll have to, we'll have to invite you to come over and help her. So there again...
And it's a matter, I think it is... probably one of the things I did with my kids was encourage them to cook. And one of my my granddaughter, who's 9, is quite confident in making her own ricotta cheese and then making pasta.
Wow, that's fantastic. Good homemade stuff.
And so I think that is when people are faced with a bag of lettuce or something, what do you do with it? And I think that's where a lot of it... we're talking. There's I belong to a group called Let's Grow Palmy, and we're encouraging people to grow food.
Let's Grow Palmy.
And I think that would be something that you were talking about your garden.
Yeah.
That a group like that could possibly help
and we can sort of collaborate with you as well and do something like that.
But preserving your vegetables and things like that for use when there's a surplus is
exactly important. Because I remember even in Italy, my aunties used to at the end of the season used to get a lot of tomatoes from the market as well at a good price, and they would actually preserve them and put them away, and then literally the
whole purees and things like that are really important.
I've actually got a passata machine.
Oh wow, fantastic! So
a what machine?
Passata.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
yeah, yeah. So,
sorry.
And that you can, you know, that you can keep for a number of months, years, possibly even.
Yeah.
And then when you need it, you've got it. Even when it's not tomato season, you've still got tomatoes or something.
Yeah.
So
we're
keen to look at things like that as well. So people, but some people might not know what to do. And so if we actually have some classes and people can actually make the chutney, for example, as you suggested, and then take that away with them, with the recipe plus the actual what they've produced. That, again, it's empowering as well. We have actually started, sorry, just
your,
we're about to launch a YouTube cooking channel through City Mission. And again, it's, we've asked people from a whole range of backgrounds to show us how to make a good meal. Healthy, but on budget, without using all the technology. Because, you know, some of them might say, well, put it through the blender. Well, what if you don't have a blender? You know, you might have to do mashed potatoes with a fork, you know. That's actually okay as well. So looking at different aspects like that,
But you'd also know from all sorts of areas you're involved in, the whole social dimension of food. So people getting more involved in food and cooking and preparing and sharing food is actually something that we're losing. In fact, they were talking about at one stage families would all sit down together for a meal, and a lot of that is gone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember even growing up, I mean, we didn't get food if we didn't sit at the table, you know.
Yes, we
all come and sit down here and we chat. And so, you know, cooking classes is an option where we could get people coming along. The problem with that is some people might not feel, what if I go to these cooking classes and people find out I'm not such a good cook? Well, that's why you're going to cooking classes, right? It doesn't mean to say you're a bad cook. It's just being exposed to
different
recipes.
It was an interesting experience for me as an undergraduate at university. The student accommodation that we had were sort of large flats where you cook your own meals.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so the female students often felt their reputation was at stake, so they couldn't take risks. It had to work out every time.
Oh, wow.
Whereas the male students said, we've got a low budget, I can only buy this junk, how can I make it tasty? I'll throw this stuff in and experiment with all sorts of things. There's not the reputation to worry about. You can't be proud with that. You got to play around.
So
the skills.
So hopefully that'll be one thing. And again, we don't necessarily have chefs and cooks at City Mission, but actually partnering with others to see how, you know, we can work
together. This is the number of churches that in the past did fundraisers by everyone putting their favourite recipe and you make a recipe for it yourself.
Exactly. So, that's also a good idea if you get a whole range of people that come along. Put all those recipes together and then you can share them and create something.
And now we've got all the cross-cultural ones, all the diverse groups we've got.
That could be quite fantastic. Another, you say, with the fundraising, use that as a basis and then,
And also, like, I mean, I'd love to learn how to cook a really good, authentic curry. And yes, I could go online.
But no, I don't think there's such thing as an authentic curry, because the curry is the English name for the whole range.
And it's been modified.
Indian cooking. Well, even now, it's not necessarily authentic, because with the cooking things you have now, like in America, they call them instant pots, the electric. You know, you can cook the very complex dishes quite easily.
And I suppose even with slow cookers, you can pop things in there.
My dad
used to tell me that his mum used to wake up in the morning, get the kids ready for school, give them breakfast, and when they left, she would start the dinner.
Yes.
But like, she would make the bolognese sauce, chop up the tomatoes, and actually slowly, slowly cook them for hours and hours. We don't have time for that anymore.
Yeah.
So hence the slow cooker sort of helps out as well. Throw everything in there and then it's ready a few hours later.
That brought up for me something that we seem to have lost as well. I remember when you're young, your Sunday lunch maybe or Sunday roast, you've got half a day of the smells wafting through the house. Now with the instant sort of food, you just don't
have not quite the same.
We've lost a lot with that. So anyway, coming to New Zealand, was it a big change? Was it an easy thing to adjust to?
We found it quite easy.
Yeah.
I didn't ever want to stay in South Africa. I always wanted to leave. And so I just felt at home straight away when I got here.
Okay.
And I just found settling in really quite easy.
Yeah. So you joined group or you joined a church when you came?
Yes.
So was that a big part of adjusting quite quickly? You felt part of the community straight away?
Definitely. If you do have a church connection, that does make it easier. Or any other groups. I know there are, obviously, like in New Zealand, in Palmerston North, we have so many different ethnic groups and associations as well. And so I think connecting to somebody who is from a similar background or the same background does actually help as well.
So for you, was that the South African community or the Italian community?
Well, unfortunately, the Italian community is so small in Palmerston. So it's one of those unfortunate things. But so we actually connected with the church.
Okay.
And we didn't necessarily have to go and look for the South African community.
Okay. How old were your children when you came
here? My son was 8 and my daughter was 4.
And how did they find it?
I mean, they really miss their friends. I think, you know, you say that, or you hear people saying that the children adjust easily, that's not a problem. But, you know, taking them out of school or kindy is quite a big thing because they've made friends there and suddenly now they have to start from scratch again in a way.
And they found the friendships were different, ways of mixing.
It's just
new people. It wasn't behaved different, they played different games,
it was all the same. And you know, it was just the four of us. We didn't know anybody in Palmerston North, no aunties and uncles or friends or anything. We had to really start from the beginning again. I think a lot of migrants do that when they do start off as well.
That raises another dimension, though, the extended family sort of structure. Have you been able to maintain links?
Yes. With Italy, I maintain, and I still have two cousins in South Africa.
Okay, with Italy. So you, apart from holidays, you never actually lived in Italy, but you have close family tie.
I'm an Italian Kiwi. If that makes sense. As I mentioned earlier, I never had a sense of belonging in South Africa. And again, when I went to Italy, my cousins were different. Our worldviews were slightly different. But then when I came here, I just felt this is my Turanga Waiwai, where I just could connect.
Which is very strange.
It doesn't sort of make any sense. This is home.
It's probably parts of what you're doing with your life. Something I noticed in growing up in Britain, it was at the time lots of people started going to university, big expansion. So many young people, instead of staying where they grew up, they moved to other towns or cities. And you would find, if they were there long enough, or they married, or they had a child there, or something, they had put down roots, and that became their home. If you've got family in school here and so on, then
And I suppose if you are a third culture kid in South Africa, and then you move to New Zealand. You then do have the option of choosing your identity. So my friend, who same context, she sees her parents as Italian. But she's South African and now living in New Zealand. So I suppose with identity, it's where you connect, where you feel connected.
Well, you've got that sometimes, I think, with accents growing up. I know someone who... certainly before school age, when he came here from London, but he still has a very broad London accent. Whereas a lot could lose, I think he deliberately maintained his identity, whereas others would lose it very strongly.
It's interesting. And I think it is good to connect with groups when you do arrive in a new city, because you get that support. You know, and sometimes you do speak somebody from the similar background, and you just have certain jokes, for example. Your humor might be different, and you say something, people get it or connect. But actually, it is important to actually connect with others. From other groups, either ethnicities or local people, and stretch beyond your own sort of cultural background. connections. Yeah,
I think that part of a rich life anyway, tying into the diversity of cultures. Because often I found for myself growing up with a mixed background. The dominant one, everyone in the dominant culture, say, sees it all as that, whereas with the minority one, you get out of the dominant environment into those minority homes, and you suddenly find they're doing things quite differently that wouldn't be observed otherwise.
Absolutely, it's a big one.
Which is enriching. Well, it's a bit like learning different languages. Different ways of looking at things.
And I think a lot of people say, well, and New Zealand is like the UK, or people, originally centuries ago, but actually it's not like, just because you speak English doesn't mean to say, and many people did come from the UK.
Yeah,
there have been so many changes, even with the accents as well have changed. And
well, the accent, the language is changing.
So there are differences there as well.
And you see differences perhaps in different parts of the country. The class structure is very strong in Britain. And sometimes they look at it in a negative way. I think you could draw relatively close parallels with class and caste and so on, although they tend not to make that link. But at the same time, one big aspect of Britain was class wasn't just vertical hierarchies. You could have different groups even horizontally, and it's saying we do things this way, which is fine, we're allowed to, and we'll allow those other groups to do things other ways. Whereas New Zealand, the very strong approach that I found coming here was, well, we want people who are like us, we should all be the same, so we don't have to get to know you, we already know what you think and feel
about
So the diversity is good.
Yeah, that's good, definitely.
So how about your children then? They adapted well? They see themselves as New Zealanders now?
Yes, with the Italian connection though.
And you and they will stay here for good, or you think they'll go overseas?
Well, my daughter has just spent 6 months in Europe. She's in New York at the moment. And it's just been a really great opportunity for her. And you know, with digital nomads, you can actually work anywhere, and so she's actually carried on working by distance. I mean, she's had to do a few Zoom calls at 2 a.m.
So what sort of work does she...
So she works in the disability sector as well. But she's a communication advisor and a marketing advisor. She did a degree through Massey. Marketing, so
she can just travel and work at the same time.
It's been a good so you still get some income.
That's something new,
saving for going overseas is so expensive, but she which has been good.
So she's basically just traveling and looking at things
while still getting an income.
And looking for somewhere else to settle, or just
when she gets back, she'll make a decision. She does quite like Europe and the connection Italy.
And your son is
lives here, and he's quite happy to remain in Palmerston North. It's a good place.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.